Greetings and welcome back to the CBMW Podcast, your weekly download of cutting-edge complementarian commentary and one-stop shop for egalitarian opposition research. We hope you're listening. I am Jonathan Swan, Executive Editor of ICON, a journal for biblical anthropology, and I'm joined alongside by Colin Smothers, the Executive Director of CBMW and CBMW's President, Denny Burke. Now, this is related, I promise, to what we'll talk about here. But when I went to the kitchen this morning to make my kids their breakfast meal, I noticed this blob of humans. There were three boys piled on top of one another, and I thought to break it up, but sometimes you got to let these things play out. But they were wrestling first thing this morning. Colin, you've got a few brothers. I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I've got three brothers, and I also am father to four boys, and we try to encourage the healthy masculine play.
That's right.
There. Nobody gets hurt, but also everybody having fun.
Absolutely. Well, today we want to talk about an article released in the Wall Street Journal. Denny, was this article today? Is this from today?
I don't know what the date was on it. It looks like it was.
It's recent.
No, it was yesterday. It looks like it was 2 days ago.
All right. It's recent. This week, it's from Brad Wilcox. He's a
December
sociologist.
9th.
What was that?
December 9th.
December 9th. Okay. And we actually have interviewed him multiple times on ICON, but he's got this interesting article today we want to discuss. And I want to start just with an anecdote from it. It's the whole article is about young men. He leads by saying, "My female students at the University of Virginia are worried about the state of the opposite sex. The women who take my sociology of family class tell of brothers living in their parents' basements, boyfriends hooked on pornography, and male peers who don't pull their weight in group projects. Most troublingly, many of these women say they have never been asked on a date. Their voices are part of a rising chorus expressing concern about the falling fortunes of our boys and men." So that's sort of his anecdotal introduction. But then he goes on to discuss a book by Scott Galloway, a recent book published just 1 month ago. It's called Notes on Being a Man. And he says this, Galloway does. He says, "Neither in school nor working has..." "The share of young men who are, quote, neither in school nor working has tripled since 1980. Wilcox goes on to say, "Meanwhile, 60% of young men between the ages of 18 and 24 still live with their parents. And according to Mr. Galloway, 45% of young men have never even approached a woman in person. This male malaise is driving, quote, deaths of despair, suicide, drug overdose, alcohol poisoning, end quote, to record highs among men, especially working class men." So, Denny, what are your thoughts just on these general figures, the rest of the article? Should we be concerned about the state of young men in our society?
Well, you know, what's happening here is Brad Wilcox is reviewing a book by Scott Galloway titled Notes on Being a Man. And so it looks like the book, which we haven't gotten yet, we're just looking at the, you know, Brad Wilcox's coverage of it. It looks like it's basically the book is confirming what all of us have already been seeing anecdotally, and that there's a crisis of manhood in our culture today. And this has been ongoing for a number of years. I would say it's been a slow burn for decades. You've moved from second wave feminism in the 1960s and 70s all the way to a kind of the scandal of manhood. You say, well, what do you mean by the scandal of manhood? What I mean is that today masculinity is conceived of as toxic masculinity. It's in other words, masculinity itself is a scandal to a lot of people. I'm not saying that there's no such thing as people who behave in bad ways, according to masculine stereotypes. What I'm saying is that masculinity itself has been eviscerated through a number of ideological moves and then also a lot of social pathologies that have been going on for a long time. And the ideological moves are not disconnected from the social pathologies. Let's just take one example from the article. Think about the ubiquity of pornography use today. Now, think about how basically progressivism was approving of this and removing restraints on this for years and years and years. And now you've got a technology that can deliver this content to anyone, including men, at any time of the day, you know, to their you know, their cell phone, their smartphone. And so they've got access to all of this all of the time. And so we've talked about this on here numerous times. Okay. But here now, Brad Wilcox and then also Scott Galloway are confirming that what happens to the male sex drive if he's just marinating his brain in porn? Well, it diminishes. And what happens if the male sex drive diminishes towards like actual women who aren't on the screen? Well, it means they don't ask him out on dates. It means the ones that are married are less interested in their real live living wives. It means their tastes and preferences are being shaped by, you know, this content. This is just one part. This is just one feature that they're highlighting here about this crisis of masculinity and how it's been eviscerated. And I do think it's a combination of ideologies on the one hand, and which have manifested in certain social pathologies.
Wilcox, throughout the article, the main part of it's maybe outlined in three major paragraphs, which he's outlining the main contents of this book, which appear to articulate masculinity under these three P's, which he says are protecting, providing, and procreating. Are these sufficient? What else would we maybe add to that?
Well, I think inherent in those three P's is another one that we like to highlight here at CBMW. You know, men are built for leadership. So it takes leadership to provide. It takes leadership to protect. And obviously procreation is, you know, connected to leadership in marriage, leadership in the family. So I do think that's good rubric here to sort of organize the data that's facing men, where men are currently, you know, not living up to their design, and also where the society has challenged men in just those areas. As Denny pointed out, you know, it's largely the successive waves of feminism that are telling men, you know, they're not unique, you know, they're not needed. You know, a woman can do anything you can do and probably even better. And so many men have heard that and said, well, maybe I can just check out and let my wife do it. You know, maybe I could just check out and, you know, a father's not necessary. A mother is sufficient. Why does a boy need to grow up with a man in the home? You know, he's got his mama. So you see the problem here at fundamental root is the notion of male-female interchangeability. We're telling men they're not unique, that they're not needed. They're not, their leadership, their provision, their protection is not needed in society because women can do that. And again, maybe even do it better than you can. So men have got the message loud and clear. I'm not blaming everything on feminism here. I think men have obviously responsibility here for listening to these false messages and not taking on their God-given design to lead in society, to lead in their families. But the stats are crazy. John, you already highlighted one of them, but the one that jumped out to me was in that second paragraph when he said, the share of young men who are neither in school nor working has tripled since 1980. So these are guys that are not working, not in school. What are they doing? That number has tripled since 1980. There's another stat that I accessed recently for a talk I gave last week at the Fatherhood Commission down in Rome, Georgia. And that was that since 1970, the percentage of young men, or the percentage really of children growing up without a father in the home, has doubled since 1970. So it went from 17% back in the 1970s of children growing up without father in the home to now close to 40% today, children growing up without a man in the home. Right there is the breakdown of all those P's, right? Provision, protection, the leadership vacuum is very apparent.
You know, it's really fascinating too in this article that, you know, Galloway in his book cites the three P's that would give, you know, purpose to a man's life, protection, provision, and procreation. Now, what's fascinating about this is that how much it overlaps with what we've been trying to talk about in terms of manhood for, you know, over 30 years here at CBMW. Because what, you know, what we've been arguing is what is reflected in a lot of people's doctrinal statements. Like I'm a Southern Baptist, and in the Baptist Faith and Message, it says that men are called to lead and to protect and to provide, and that this is a creational reality. In other words, this is not just a role that's a stereotype that's disconnected from nature. God's original design and creation was for, within a marriage, for a man to lead and to protect and to provide. He's been designed by God for those tasks. And so what's fascinating is that we know this from the Bible. I think we know it from nature. And when men stop suppressing the truth long enough to look at the data, they're coming to the same conclusion. I mean, they really are. Now, the one thing in here that's different is that they say protection, provision, and then procreation, whereas we would say leadership, protection, and provision. I think that's a sign that, well, you know, your researcher there is never going to want to come to a conclusion that would go, you know, full throttle in the face of feminism. And that leadership assignment is something that, you know, a lot of secular people are going to have an allergy to, but we would argue that's a part of God's creation design as well. There's a real structure of authority and submission that God has, you know, prescribed for marriage, that husbands are supposed to lead and that wives are supposed to submit to that leadership, and that, you know, a healthy marriage is going to consist of that. And I would just say that I think women actually want that. I think that they miss it when it's gone, and they don't actually respect the men who won't do that, who abdicate that responsibility. I do think that they are still looking for men to be leaders, even if the, you know, this study, this is a marketing professor at New York University, Scott Galloway, even if his study doesn't confirm that, it's still the truth.
Yeah, I was looking at the Institute for Family Studies. I believe I saw a headline there that said women are most happy when their men are protective. And it was interesting in this article, I'm looking for it here, Galloway apparently talks about cultivating physical, it's here right here in the article, cultivating physical and emotional fitness. You consider what's happened in our education centers where, you know, Abigail Schreier talks about these sort of group therapy sessions that happen at school, which you're just to kind of draw up all of these feelings. How are you feeling today? And how are you feeling about this grievance? None of this fosters emotional strength, and especially among young men, the kind of strength that's needed to endure hard times and lead families. I don't know what you guys thought of that. I found that very interesting.
Well, something else that sociologists do point out is something called the success sequence, and they recognize that if you get these life events in the right order, so many pathologies, social pathologies can be avoided, including, you know, poverty and the like. And that is, it's very simple. The sequence is graduate high school, get a job, and then get married before you have kids. And what we're looking at in these stats, the kind of stats that Galloway highlights, is the first part of those things. You know, maybe a lot of men are still graduating high school, but they're not getting a job. You know, a third of that number has tripled, or, you know, that number's tripled since 1980. And then they're delaying or maybe never getting married. And this is where I would, you know, critique Galloway, and to his credit, Wilcox does the same thing. The procreation piece has to be in the context of marriage. There's a responsibility and a covenant that comes when a man, you know, binds himself to a woman in covenantal agreements. And then it's through that union that produces their offspring and forms families. And yeah, all of that is going to be emotionally taxing, which is going to cause, or which is going to need emotional resilience. Men need to be strong for the task. And the fathers are not raising their sons to be men. Society is telling them masculinity and manhood is the problem. So be less of a man, not more of a man. And I think we're seeing breakdown across the board.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you want to categorize the pathologies that we're talking about, they fall into the same two categories that the Danvers statement, you know, our founding document here at CBMW, it said the pathologies would be. It was either men are too passive, mm-hmm. or they tend towards abuse. Mm-hmm. Right. Those are the two pathologies. Those are the two species of errors of manhood, where a man would not live up to his responsibilities and abdicate and be passive, not involved in the home, not involved with the child rearing, letting the wife do everything. That's a big one right now, is the passivity. And then a lot of things kind of underwrite that passivity. And then on the other side of that, you've got the men who are abusers of authority, who are, you know, they do live up to the label toxic masculinity. So all these pathologies are breaking down into the same categories that we've been talking about for a long time, decades.
So guys, it's clear there are occasional encouraging science, books like this that seem to get so much right. You know, I think of the last 10 years, you had guys like Jordan Peterson, who are not Christian in any orthodox sense. They claim it in sort of a pragmatic sense. And they've sort of shepherded and parented a lot of young people online. But ultimately, right, the biblical vision is designed to come from the church and should come and only will come from an orthodox preaching church. What role does the church play, and how can we cultivate a biblical, healthy masculinity within our churches?
I think the church has a prophetic role to play in this. We are the ones who are entrusted with God's testimony that and God's revelation that genuinely is the path of life. God's good creation in Genesis 1 and 2 is the blueprint for healthy masculinity and healthy femininity, and the blueprint out of a confusion of those things, which is so rampant in our society today. And then also, the church is the caretaker and the propagator of the gospel message itself, which is the fix, which is the solution for all of the ways that we have failed, also in our masculinity and in the ways that culture is continuing to challenge men, and that is to man up like the Lord Jesus Christ, to live and be formed into His image, to receive the forgiveness for your pathologies, for your failures, for the ways that you have missed the mark, and then you know the hope that comes when you respond to that gospel. So the church should be modeling this. The church should be witnessing to this. The reality that really is the way out of this mess that we've gotten ourselves into,
and really pastors especially need to not treat this like a third rail. Pastors need to be talking about what the Bible teaches on manhood and womanhood. Mm-hmm. It's not like the Bible's silent on this. It's with it. It's at the very creation. You've got the paradigm set for manhood and womanhood, marriage covenant, what the roles are within that marriage. You've got a head and you've got a helper. And, you know, these are very elemental things in the Bible, and the Bible is presuming it throughout. Okay. Even when it's not talking about it, it's presuming this framework throughout. And then you have specific New Testament texts, you know, explicating this. And so pastors have a real burden here to preach and to model what is in the scriptures on these things, even when it doesn't comport with the spirit of the age, because the spirit of the age, you know, hates this stuff. Mm-hmm. And has been trying to suppress this forever. And so we just need to have a clear ministry of the word and a clear example given to the congregation. And that's where you're going to start to see growth.
Well, there are no shortages on these topics here at our website, CBMW. We have an 8-week curriculum on men, women, and sexuality. We encourage you to subscribe to ICON, tell your pastors about it so they can do just that. Well, thank you so much for watching and listening today. For all of our resources, visit cbmw.org.